Welcome to Nightlights. I'm David Brent Johnson. It's one of the greatest music finds in the history of jazz, a treasure trove of radio broadcasts from the golden age of swing, captured for posterity by a jazz buff and engineer named Bill Savory, and featuring previously unknown recordings of Lester Young, Teddy Wilson, Coleman Hawkins, Benny Goodman, Fats Waller, Duke Ellington, and other iconic artists. National Jazz Museum in Harlem director Lauren Schoenberg joins us to play some of this long-lost music and to talk about it. It's Listening to the Savory Collection with Lauren Schoenberg, coming up next on Nightlights.
Thank you.
Louis Armstrong, Jack Teagarden, and Fats Waller performing the early jazz-era standard Tiger Rag on a December 1938 New York City radio broadcast. How often do you get to hear those three artists perform together? Tenor saxophonist Bud Freeman, guitarist Al Casey, bassist Red Callender, and drummer Slick Jones also participating in the musical festivities. That comes from the CD A Satchel Full of Satch, and it's also a broadcast that's turned up as a part of the Savory Collection, and even better, audio fidelity. The quest for the Holy Grail. It's a narrative that jazz fans love. That lost or elusive recording, whether it's an acetate, a rare 78, or even the cylinder that New Orleans jazz legend Buddy Bolden supposedly made, can keep collectors, scholars, and others searching for years or even decades. For jazz artist and National Jazz Museum in Harlem director Lauren Schoenberg, a 30-year quest came to an ending even more exciting than he'd dreamed of when he acquired a collection of swing-era radio broadcasts for the museum. The recordings, made by an engineer and jazz fan named Bill Savory, offer hours and hours of jazz greats such as Benny Goodman, Duke Ellington, Billie Holiday, Lester Young, and others performing, often captured in excellent audio fidelity. For jazz buffs, it's a chance to hear all manner of detail and nuance emerging in a way that may change how we look at jazz history. For anybody who simply enjoys the music made by some of America's finest artists, it's a delight to have even more of it come to light. The Savory Collection had long been an item of interest for a small group of jazz scholars. Savory himself had been responsible for recording Benny Goodman's historic 1938 Carnegie Hall concert, and a few of his privately made recordings of Goodman broadcast had come out on LP in the early 1950s. Schoenberg, who worked for Benny Goodman late in the clarinetist's life, says the collection turned out to yield far more than what he'd expected.
I met Bill Savory in 1980, and I asked him how it was that he had picked the best of all this material he had. I mean, I'm assuming when I say a lot of material, I didn't know what he had. But he put together this wonderful 2-LP set for Columbia of Goodman air checks, and the quality level was, every track was a killer. So I said, you know, how did you pick the best of all the material you had? He said, I didn't pick the best. I picked the best of what was in the first box. So I knew then, you know, that there was more than just one box worth of Benny Goodman acetate. So basically, I spent the next 24 years pestering the guy to let me come hear it. And then eventually it was clear he didn't want anyone to hear it. I asked if I could see a list or if I could do anything. And he just kept saying no and kept putting me off, wrote him letters, called. He died 24 years later. And it wasn't until the spring of 2010 that I actually laid my little mitts on it, but that's what happened. I mean, it's a fascinating time. It's one of my own favorite periods of American jazz, 1936 to 1940. And, of course, when we found it, we discovered that it wasn't just Benny Goodman, but there was Ellington and Basie and Billie Holiday and Paul Whiteman and Lee Sims and Martha Ray and just all this stuff. So I think really, basically, it's really the story of the buried treasure.
Let's listen in now to the Savory Collection with Lauren Schoenberg, who's brought along a few items that have never been played on air before.
There you have it, the Boogie Woogie Stomp, played for you by Albert Ammons, one of the famous Boogie Woogie Trio down here at Cafe Society. Back we go to the music of Joe Sullivan and the Dixieland Band, the music that's as hep in the early 40s as it was in the roaring 20s. Here we go with China Boy. Okay, Joe, we gone.
What's interesting here is, you know, they're already qualifying the music as still relevant. Kind of like an interesting thing about how we talk now about repertory jazz. This is 1940. Anyway, this is live at the Cafe Society. And you're about to hear Edmund Hall with Joe Sullivan's band, one of the very, very first examples of Edmund playing small group jazz live on the radio. I'll just point out real quick here, listen to how wonderful the fidelity is. You know, it's funny how creative Joe Sullivan was as a pianist. really something. Of course, this is Mildred Bailey singing with the Benny Goodman Quartet, Lionel Hampton, Teddy Wilson, Benny, and probably Joe Jones on the drums. Seconds after Lester Young and Count Basie walked off the stage, man, I would have given anything to have been there that night. Man, you know, the synergy of Wilson and Hampton and Goodman there, man, it's like a jigsaw puzzle. Listen carefully. You're about to hear some rare Lester Young clarinet behind Jimmy Rushing with the Basie Band.
Don't you look lonesome shining through the trees? Don't the moon look lonesome shining through the trees? Don't your house look lonesome when your baby packed up to leave? Sent for you yesterday, baby, here you come today. Sent for you yesterday, baby, here you
come today. Hear
the way
Lester picked up the riff with the saxes?
Baby, you can't love me, treat me that way.
Sweet citizen. This is an air check from a 1939 broadcast. Don't have the date yet, but man, as you can hear, David, the sound is phenomenal. You know, David, you asked me about the Holy Grail or the one thing I found. This is the record that I have been looking for. This is a jam session, November 38. Benny Goodman, Lester Young, Roy Eldridge, Teddy Wilson, Joe Jones, Sid Weiss on the bass, and Ben Heller on the guitar. And a little bit of this had existed before, but not in this sound quality. I mean, let's listen to it real carefully. And Lester Young sounds like you said, like someone who came from another planet. He really does. Said chord substitutions were a thing that came in later jazz. Did you hear that? Here comes Lester. Now, if that wasn't enough, a prime Lester Young solo, now we're going to hear some Roy Eldridge. You hear the alacrity with which Joe Jones is in there, man. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why he was so important. I mean, he could turn on a dime. Now we'll hear just a little bit of Benny Goodman before we fade out. Now, David, you and I are both Dave Tough fans, and this record has some wonderful Dave Tough drums. The thing about him is he's so unpredictable. You have to listen very careful. It's a very subtle art. This is the Goodman Big Band in the spring of 38, and he doesn't do too much here. That's why I'm talking over it. But when the second chorus comes up, listen carefully. Funny little tom-tom, like doop-doop noises he makes. I mean, they're really full of humor.
Music from Bill Savory's collection of swing-era radio broadcast. Lauren Schoenberg says we almost didn't get to hear it.
After Bill Savory died, his son Gene got a phone call from the people that were handling the estate, and they said that they were going to throw out all these boxes of stuff. You know, they had found this, they had found that, and he said, whoa, hold your horses, and sent his daughter out, as I understand, with a van and just said, go pick the stuff up and bring it back, and she did. So, no, actually, Gene Savory is by leaps and bounds the hero of the story. I mean, yes, I found it after 30 years. Yes, Bill Savory recorded it, but Gene is the one who stopped it from going in the dumpster. That's probably the most significant thing.
He realized the value of what his father had done.
Well, I don't know whether Gene had any conception of the enormity of it. I think his motivation was that it was something that his father had done that meant a lot to him, and that clearly these were important recordings. But I don't think even Gene knew the scope of them.
How many hours worth of jazz-related broadcast are there in the collection total?
Well, David, that's a good question. I can tell you that as of now, I have 77 70-minute CDs of material. So that's 100 hours or something like that if we do the math. Not all of it is great music. Most of it is. But yes, so I mean, there's that, at least that much. And just while I was waiting for you here to do the interview, I got another email from Doug Pomeroy in Brooklyn saying that he found another Goodman disc, you know, and he has no idea what it is.
Bill Savory worked as an audio engineer, transcribing broadcast off the air for radio networks and advertisers. Using 12 and 16-inch acetate disc made of aluminum or metal, he was able to make recordings of the jazz artists that he loved as well.
A lot of people are under the misconception that Bill Savory was like in the studio where the music was being played with a microphone or in a nightclub. He wasn't. He was at, like we are now, he was in a radio station. It wasn't a radio station, but he was in a place with direct lines from all the major networks so that the music could be recorded off the air onto state-of-the-art equipment. But it's like to call Art Tatum a pianist. You know, you wouldn't want to call him a pianist, or Charlie Chaplin a film comedian. Bill Savory was much more than just a recording engineer. He was kind of a genius about recording technology and sound and acoustics. And it's just because he was such a jazz nut as a young man that he recorded all these things. And so, you know, he brought all his ability to bear on to try and capture them at the highest fidelity possible. A lot of the wear and tear that we hear on some of the discs is not his fault. It's what happened in the maintenance of the recordings over the subsequent half century.
Let's hear some more excerpts now from the Savory collection.
You know, Bunny Berrigan was kind of a hard scrabble guy. A great trumpet player, drank himself to death in his early 30s, kind of a bad luck kind of guy in a certain way. And in terms of the Savory collection, also virtually everything we have by his band is an execrable sound quality. And very little of it, I think, will ever be issued when we put the stuff out. I want to share something with you. This is a tune called Was It the Human Thing to Do? And just listen to Bunny. Georgie Auld and Buddy Rich, who are about to go with Artie Shaw's band. That's Bunny on lead trumpet. This is Buster Bailey on a jam session with Bunny Berrigan on the Tiger Rag. He plays crazy. He takes a break coming up at a moment where he makes one of the funniest sounds I've ever heard. Listen carefully. Recorded something called Man with a Horn Goes Berserk. I understand it now. Now here, coming up behind us, this is Cab Calloway's big band featuring Chu Berry on Body and Soul, something that we never knew he played with the Calloway band. Here it is. Before Coleman Hawkins' version, people forget about this. A small group out of the Calloway band called the Cab Jivers, and as you can hear, Chu is just on fire, man. Listen.
Duke is on the air.
This is spring of 1938.
From the Cotton Club on the Great White Way in New York City, Columbia is presenting to your dancing pleasure
the music of Duke Ellington and his orchestra. And here's a composition we played now entitled Diminuendo in Blue.
The band had first recorded this about a year earlier, several months earlier, and on the record it sounds like they're still learning it because this is a difficult piece of music. How interesting to hear them just 6 months later, they know it, they can rip it off without a clam in sight. This is Ellington and a small band, what would have been called Johnny Hodges and his orchestra, live on one of the Martin Block jam sessions in 1938. Jeep's Blues, and listen for how beautiful the sound quality is. Next time we talk to Brent Wallerab, we got to talk about the minor four chord on the sixth measure of the blues there. That's our estimate. From the same broadcast, this is a piece later called Dancing on the Moon and Stars. Here it was called Saxita. Has a beautiful trombone by Lawrence Brown. On the trumpet, man. He played so beautifully. That was one of the Martin Block jam sessions. This next one is one of the most extraordinary ones, especially because it was just unknown to have occurred. It's Fats Waller, and the band is Jack Teagarden, Charlie Teagarden, trombone and trumpet, Bud Freeman, Eddie Condon, Artie Shapiro, and Zooty Singleton, and Fats Waller, and Pee Wee Russell. And they play a blues. And Fats did a Commodore record date with some of these musicians around this time, and it's a wonderful session. On this particular date, him and Pee Wee Russell really seemed to be communicating with each other between the piano and the clarinet. And we're going to hear Pee Wee's blues solos here. And just listen real carefully for the communication between the piano and the clarinet. This is one of the highlights of the whole collection right here. Thank you. course, Eddie Condon is also helping a lot on the guitar, of course.
We've been listening to music from the Bill Savory Archives. I'll have more from the Savory Collection and my interview with Lauren Schoenberg in just a few moments. Production support for Nightlights comes from Landlocked Music CDs and Vinyl, offering new and used music, DVDs, turntables, and more. Located at 202 North Walnut in Bloomington or online at landlockedmusic.com. And from the Laughing Planet Cafe and Soma Coffee House, offering San Francisco-style burritos, coffee drinks, and 100% fruit smoothies made with locally grown and organic ingredients. On the corner of Kirkwood and Grant in Bloomington, Indiana. I'm David Brent Johnson, and you're listening to Listening to the Savory Collection with Lauren Schoenberg on Nightlights. I'm playing music from the Savory Collection on this edition of Nightlights, excerpts from radio broadcast in the Golden Age of Swing, featuring many jazz greats and some lesser-known musicians as well, recorded by engineer Bill Savory and now being preserved by the National Museum of Jazz, whose director Lauren Schoenberg pursued the recordings for 30 years. He says the recordings open a new window into the world of the past.
I think the Savory Collection serves as a very potent reminder of how little we actually have of what happened in the formative years of jazz, because you couldn't record live. I mean, you know, it was a big simis, that's a Yiddish word. It was a big deal, you know, to record. And the Savory Collection just reminds us that all the judgments that we bring to bear, aesthetic judgments, or even just the way that we feel about preference, I mean, on the one hand, all we have are the recordings. So, yes, I mean, we have to base all of our thoughts on the recordings because that's all we can listen to, of course. But it's the awareness of the fact that it's a very incomplete picture that we have, and we really should temper a lot of our judgments and leave ourselves open to the point that we don't think that we really understand everything that there is to know about it, to the degree that it shuts ourselves off from appreciating other things. Because we know what Shoeberry did, or we know how Bunny Berrigan sounded, or we know everything about Warren Marsh or about whomever. And so I think just as a reminder, that's the only way that I can think about it, to keep your mind open, that there may be another collection like this out there, that we may learn things. I mean, I learned things about almost all the artists in this collection that I didn't know before.
What were a couple of those things, just out of curiosity?
I learned something about Cab Calloway as a band leader. You know, I had written the notes for a mosaic box at the Complete Shoeberry, or I don't know if it's complete, but it's pretty complete. But I mean, I'd listened to a lot of Cab Calloway records, spent a lot of time with it and done my research and talked to the musicians who were still around. And I thought I really had a good handle on who Cab Calloway was as a band leader. Well, some of these broadcasts from the Cotton Club, you can hear him exhorting the band. You can hear him leading the band in a certain way. You can hear him reacting to the solos, and I don't know, it just really gave me, I think, a much fuller picture for who Cab Calloway really was. I mean, Gunther Schuller, I think, was the first one to really point out in his book, The Swing Era, about Calloway's prowess as a vocalist. And he was an odd chameleon-like vocalist. He had different styles. He sang this style, a ballad style. He sang his Heidi Ho style. He sang his jive style. But, I mean, what a wonderful vocalist he was. So anyway, so that's one thing that I learned. Other things I learned, more about Dave Tough, who's one of my obsessions. and about his great artistry on the drums and hearing him with Benny Goodman's band. Learned about something about Paul Whiteman because there's some broadcasts of the Paul Whiteman Show with Mildred Bailey and with Bobby Hackett, and hearing the way that he talked. And basically, well, let me give you the analogy that I use for the Lester Young solo that I talked about. There are no photographs of Lincoln smiling. The only photograph that with anything anywhere near a smile, I believe, is the last photographs taken in April 1865, where there's one with a cracked glass pane, and he's kind of has half of the beginning of a little bit of a smile. It's nowhere even near a smile. But yet you read about Lincoln, and you read that, you know, he was famous for his sense of humor and his jokes, and that's what people remember about him, is how he, all these things. And what I thought was that there's one Lester Young solo in particular on After You've Gone that, for me, is like finding the photograph of Lincoln smiling. In other words, with Lester Young, the one thing that everybody who heard him back in those days said, or one of the things that they said, was that you never really heard him play unless you heard him play 5 or 10 choruses. I mean, you just didn't hear it. What you hear on the records and everything else is just like somebody in, you know, in fourth gear, third gear, never anywhere near second gear, and certainly nowhere remotely near first gear. And that's one of the things, you know, that to me has always been so intriguing about the music of Lester Young, is as much as I love it and millions of people around the world love it, it's incomplete. And there's something about one of these solos that at least gets us into high third. Let's put it that way.
Let's listen now to more of the Savory Collection with Lauren Schoenberg.
This is Fats Waller and his band live at the Yacht Club playing The Spider and the Fly and just going berserk. Just check it out.
Because she walked into his parlor, unsuspecting little fly. As a gentleman and scholar, bow the spider to the fly. After you have seen my parlor, you no longer will be shy. Oh, right. Oh, right. Bye-bye. 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 Oh, right. Oh, right. Don't you swing into that parlor, unsuspecting little fly. That's your
You know, you feel like you were right there, right? I mean, just like you're sitting in the Yacht Club. Yes, that's Bobby Hackett, very early, 1938, following the Goodman Quartet on a broadcast with Leith Stevens' band playing Alice Blue Gown. I wish Dick Sutthalter had lived to hear this, the Bobby Hackett band. He would have loved this. Now we're going to Chicago, the Grand Terrace Ballroom, 1939. Tenor saxophonist Bud Johnson with the Earl Hines Big Band, a tune that I don't believe they recorded. Maybe you can tell me, David, if they did. It's called Please Stay Out of My Dreams. But anyway, after this first chorus, Bud takes off, man. And great drumming here by Alvin Burroughs, by the way. Yeah. Love that trombone, man. Now, we are now going to the stage of Carnegie Hall, 1946, late 46. It's Django Reinhardt and Duke Ellington. All we had of them together previously was something from another tour, another concert in this tour, and not great sound quality. And boom, in the Bill Savory collection, check this out. Funny thing, there's a contemporary review that says that Django didn't play well this night. You could play that in 2020 and it would sound incredibly hip. Now we're in Harlem at the Elks Rendezvous, listening to the still kind of unknown Louis Jordan Timpani 5 playing some stuff that is unique in their discography. This is Avalon. Bass player there, by the way, is probably Charlie Drayton, who could have been another Jimmy Blanton if he had had the chance. Speaking of Jimmy Blanton, what you're hearing here is the Ellington Echoes of Harlem, but played by the John Kirby Sextet with Charlie Shavers.
Everybody liked Echoes of Harlem. It was mean and wailing with an uptown beat. We heard the Duke played it and played it ourselves in the famous door. It had that Harlem feeling, mean and railing, that uptown way.
I just have to say real quick, that wasn't John Kirby talking, that's an actor. It's also interesting to hear how pianist Billy Kyle changed that left-hand figure, the bass figure for the Ellington record. So this is the Kirby version, you know, that's I think that's what they're saying. It's not. Anyway, that's fascinating. This next one is John Kirby's wife-to-be, Maxine Sullivan, Claude Thornhill arrangement, but played by the Benny Goodman Band, live on the Camel Caravan.
I know it, this time it's real. It's thrilling, so thrilling, the way I feel. Life before was different, I just played a part.
I'm sorry, man. I melt with this stuff. This is so beautiful. Listen. It's Bobby Hackett on the record, but you're about to hear the young Harry James play the beginning of a beautiful trumpet solo. Oh my God, that's beautiful.
What was that, Dan?
Why, that trio specialty guy.
Was that trio number for me? Look out now.
Now, just wait a minute. Remember, Joe Jones was on drums and Lionel Hampton on vibraphone, Teddy Wilson on piano?
Yes, but where do I come in?
Well, they were playing your brother Carmen's old tune, Coquette.
Was that what they were playing? Well, try it again. Why doesn't somebody tell me these things?
In the summer of 38, Goodman took his first vacation. So the Camel Caravan went on with guest conductors. That was Guy Lombardo, saying that he couldn't tell what tune they were playing because it's too jazzy. And here we have the Goodman Quartet without Goodman. Interesting. And the sound quality, as you'll hear, is phenomenal. Live on the radio, doing a tune that they had just recorded the day before, the announcer says. And this is called Warm Kiss and a Cold Heart.
Oh, oh, yeah. She's got the key to my heart's address. She's got a soft touch and a hard, hard mind. I said, Louie, look in her eyes.
Isn't it astonishing that this was popular music at one time?
I'll never trust her till the day I die. I don't know why I'm so attached.
Music from Bill Savory's collection of swing-era radio broadcast. The National Jazz Museum in Harlem continues to digitize the Savory collection, and visitors to the museum can make an appointment to listen to it. But will this music ever be released in some form? Perhaps a multi-disc box set of some sort? Lauren Schoenberg says that's what he hopes will happen.
We've been approached by three different labels, and we're trying to figure out who we're going to sign with. There's a lot of legal issues. In fact, there's going to be an article, it may be out already, in the American Bar Association newspaper or magazine, just about the legal conundrum facing us or whatever. I mean, I think it's solvable, but that's the big issue. The big issue is how do you get over the hump of the estates, the musicians, the recording labels. That's the big thing. The mechanicals, what they call the mechanicals, paying the rights for the tunes and the publishers, that's not a problem. That's just a formula. But the other things present a real challenge. I mean, I think that we can get around it. I think we will. Gosh, there was an editorial in the New York Times about this topic, about the Savory Collection, saying that this is a great cultural legacy and people need to hear it. And gee, we hope that nothing gets in the way.
We'll listen to some more items from the Savory Collection now, which haven't been heard since their original broadcast back in the late 1930s.
David, I know that we're both nuts about the Red Norvo band. This is Red Norvo's band playing a tune they never recorded, Persian Rug. And then the broadcast ends, I believe, and it goes into their theme. I believe that's on this selection. So this is live. Check it out. That's the band's theme song written by Eddie Sauter, but I'm not sure of the name of it. Can you imagine a band playing quietly enough so you can hear a xylophone? When I interviewed Red for the Smithsonian Oral History Project, he always called it xylophone, by the way. Wow. If anyone remembers Martha Raye anymore, it's because she was a great comedian. But she was a wonderful jazz-influenced singer. She doesn't do that much jazz phrasing here, but a little bit of it. But her intonation and pitch and phrasing and sounds, I mean, any musician who listens to this, or I think anyone who listens to it, will just say, what a wonderful singer. Listen. Right here, listen. Nice arrangement, by the way. This is Artie Shaw's band. Late 1938, a previously unheard version of What Is This Thing Called Love? Interesting bass drum accents. Not hard to understand why Benny Goodman was having nightmares about Artie Shaw, man. I mean, that band and Artie's... You know, I can't wait until the day when Goodman and Shaw really get their due for just being some of the greatest jazz improvisers of the era. Forget everything else, just what they played. I mean, who else was playing that in 1938, you know? This is a one-of-a-kind in the Savory discography. This is pianist Joe Sullivan with some seemingly well-inebriated friends just playing for them, and there's about 30 minutes of this, talking, laughing, talking about music and James B. Johnson, and you're hearing this. No one's ever heard this before. This is Tommy Dorsey's Clam Bake 7 on the air with Bud Freeman, sounding like a deranged penguin. Ha ha ha! I mean, that really matches George Johnson's playing in the Wolverines with Sonny Rollins of the 90s. I mean, that's the midway point. You know? Pee Wee Irwin. This is another forgotten pianist of the era, the wonderful Bob Zirke, doing Tea for Two with his own big band. He'd recorded this with the Bob Crosby band, but this is his band, and it's really wonderful. A little bit of Zez Confrey in there, you know, really, really interesting, man. You know, David, it's funny, when we talk about this music, when people play it on the radio, actually, not everyone, you are a great exception, of course, with the wonderful programming you do, that, you know, that so many of us listen to all around the country, I guess around the world too, but, you know, because you pick the topics that are off the beaten trail and the musicians who are, but most folks, you know, the emphasis is always, you know, Ellington Basie, Goodman, and Teddy Wilson, Lester Young, and all the people that we love, and we forget. You know, most of us forget, not you, but most people forget about the Bob Zirke band and all these other bands. And that version of Tea for Two, I could listen to that all day. The tenor player was wonderful. I love what the drummer was doing. And I think that's one of the things about the Savory Collection is that, you know, of course, a lot of the attention goes to the name jazz artists, but there's so many other things in there. Maxine Sullivan, for instance, playing and singing. And it's a real pleasure to share this stuff with you.
Thanks for tuning in this edition of Nightlights. Special thanks to Lauren Schoenberg. Production support for Nightlights comes from Landlocked Music CDs and Vinyl, located at 202 North Walnut in Bloomington or online at landlockedmusic.com, and from the Laughing Planet Cafe and Soma Coffee House on the corner of Kirkwood and Grant in Bloomington, Indiana. Nightlights is a production of WFIU and part of the educational mission of Indiana University. Christina Kuzmich, executive producer. I'm David Brent Johnson, wishing you good listening for the week ahead.